knowledge, the duty, from the health department, and the city of Alton. This public hearing started yesterday. Today we have just continued, and I hope that it is a privilege to have you again on here. And let me also acknowledge and welcome honorable members, members of both the portfolio and the select committee. You are most welcome. Stakeholders who are here, within civil society, organizations, and if the media is there, you are also welcome. We are once going to follow the procedure that we followed yesterday, whereby we allow presentation. Each 5 minutes, each 10 minutes,
by the way, I'm not Tembi Nkosi-Jassy. I'm the chairperson of the province of the PSA. I would like to make an apology for him due to medical reasons. I'm representing him. I'm Michael Pham, the chairperson of Disabled Youth in the Western Cape. As a movement, DPSA has been promoting and defending human rights of persons with disabilities since 1984. DPSA is the premier, largest, and democratic cross-disability movement of by and for persons with disability in South Africa, and it is made up of local branches spanning 9 provinces across South Africa. DPSA has played a central role in shaping the nature of the human rights struggle of persons with disabilities in South Africa. Our slogan, "Nothing About Us, Without Us," has ensured the human rights of persons with disabilities are recognized and entrenched. In the 27 years of its existence, the PSA can lay a legitimate claim to spearheading and shaping the nature of the struggle fought by disabled people in South Africa. Being a cradle of disability leadership and making its presence felt in parliament, provincial legislatures, municipal councils, public service, statutory agencies, civil society, international organizations and private sector. Institutionalization of the fundamental principle of self-representation of persons with disabilities through its powerful slogan, "Nothing about us without us." Contributing to the development of a human right based on culture that respects disability rights in our world acclaimed SA constitution, policies and legislation. Spearheading national and international initiatives on disabilities, such as South Africa Integrated National Disability Strategy, Disability Rights Charter of South Africa, Rural Disability Action, Disabled Child Action Group, Office on the Status of the Disabled People, Southern African Federation of the Disabled, Pan-African Federation of the Disabled, and UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Mirroring important developments in the equalization of opportunities for persons with disabilities throughout the African continent through gains made by persons with disabilities in South Africa. Noting that according to the White Paper on Integrated National Disability Strategy, 1997 disability have tended to be coached within a medical and welfare framework, identifying persons with disabilities as ill, different from their non-disabled peers and in need of care. This undue medical emphasis has resulted to wider social needs of persons with disabilities being neglected and further resulted to severe isolation for people with disabilities and their families. The convention is a paradigm shift in approaches to disability, moving from a model where persons with disabilities are treated as objects of medical treatment, charity and social protection to a model where persons with disabilities are recognized as objects of human rights, active in the decisions that affect their lives and empowered to claim their rights. This approach views barriers that persons with disabilities face such as attitudinal, physical, financing and cultural as the main obstacles to the full enjoyment of human rights. We also know that South Africa ratified both the UNCRPD and its optional protocol and is thus called upon to take all appropriate measures, including legislation to modify or amend existing laws, regulations, customs, and practices that constitute discrimination against people with disabilities in line with the convention. For this reason, we call for, however, since then, the 1st May 2008, the world welcomed the UNCRPD, which is an international treaty that articulates the rights of persons with disabilities. The PSA proposed that when viewed collectively and central to the UNCRPD principles is the need for the South African government as signatory to the treaty to specifically, among others, to promote, protect, and ensure the full and equal enjoyment of all human rights and fundamental freedoms by all persons with disabilities, and to promote respect for their inherent dignity. Enact and national disability legislation that will give greater protection to persons with disabilities, the establishment of independent statutory agents in the mold of the Disability Rights Commission in terms of Article 31 and 33 of the Convention to monitor and enforce compliance with the legislation. The establishment of National Disability Helpline, and which must incorporate a video relay service in terms of Article 9, 21 of the Convention to enable disabled and non-disabled citizens to access government information and delivery of services in a central and coordinated location to provide general advice and to increase meaningful participation for persons with disabilities. The National Disability Helpline is also in line with the White Paper on Integrated National Disability Strategy, 1997-36, which states that people with disabilities should have access to full information on personal health, education, and social aspects affecting their lives. All strategies and mechanisms development to make information accessible to citizens should be available in a format accessible to people with disabilities. The implementation of the UNCRPD must also result through concrete measures that strengthen intergovernmental relations framework on disability for coordinated and holistic disability development framework. DBSA calls for the implementation of the convention which South Africa signed in 2007 in order to comply with and to give substance to this international law and for South Africa's own constitution. I thank you.
All 11 official languages plus sign languages.
I would have thought that the sign language should be, you know, present here at all times, especially on this particular, you know, event. And not to wait to be requested, because I understand these other languages, official languages, but as for sign language.
Thank you.
that's trying to show that, you know, as Parliament, we should ensure that, you know, you are able to take things to wherever, like any other person.
Thank you.
things are meant for people with disabilities. Nothing is happening. So this is the thinking. So we need to look at things in the process. Another thing which I cannot understand, why should take a woman and children put together with people with disabilities? There are so many challenges with women. So many challenges with children, it's all known. But it combines with then I thought, starting on Minister for this department, I'm going to think of whatever that we are now. I'm thinking to know because maybe if you're not happy, you are hearing an investor, you are running this, maybe on the disability, operation, come down, go down in Westchester. But she's struggling to get those buildings. Wait for them to build the new buildings. Are there?
Chairperson, honorable members, members of the public. My name is Madan Krista. I'm a lecturer and occupational therapist at the University of Cape Town. I'm doing this presentation on behalf of women, disabled women from different communities, from New Crossroads, Brownstown, Khayelitsha, Philippi, Harare, Lusaka, as well as from women from the West Coast, Wine. I'm involved with these women doing work that we do, developmental work that we do in the community. And I work as a developmental practitioner as well as a researcher. What I will be presenting here would be narrative that was told by this woman. And the only reason I'm sitting here is that the women are so on their way here, they got caught up the taxi, the delayed in taxi. And one of the ladies, disabled ladies, couldn't make it this morning. So, please bear with me. When I started working with women, disabled women who previously received services from SACLA, that's the South African Christian Leadership Association, these women had lots of stories. And what I did, because it's quite overwhelming to walk in there and ask women, what do you think on the convention of the rights of persons with disabilities? People look at the word policy and it's often overwhelming to present it, to present them with it. So I followed the principles of knowledge translation, which means that we take research or we take policy documents and we translate it in a way that makes it easier for people to understand. So I formulated three questions, and the three questions were, what were services like, or what were the services that persons with disability experienced prior to 1994? What were the services after 1994? And what are the challenges that persons with disabilities have faced with? Then I added a fourth question, and I asked them for suggestions of what they could think could be done to alleviate these challenges for them. And the first three questions that I formulated aligned with the three issues that the advertisement indicated that we wanted to cover for today. So I'm going to start reading from the stories of what these women told me. From 1998 until 2002, we used to have community rehabilitation workers who were trained in all aspects of disability. community rehab workers provided assistance by showing the mothers of children with disabilities physical exercises they could do with their children. Community rehab workers also assisted with assessing assisted with making assistive devices accessible for persons with physical disabilities. These services all formed part of the third and fourth, and this is now the part that I added to contextualize. And I'm saying the services that these people received fell under the third and fourth preconditions of rehabilitation and support services as stated in the United Nations Standard Rules of 2002. The fourth preconditions of the same document was met when support groups for persons with disabilities or with mental illnesses was started up in 2000. This initiative enhanced the visibility of persons with disabilities in the communities of New Crossroads, Browns Farm, Kailicha, Philippi, and Lusaka. Community rehabilitation workers helped persons with disabilities to accept their disability status. They were also trained to support families to accept the changes that arise because of their disability. They assisted in applications of social grants, and then they referred to the community rehab workers. These are the three above-mentioned preconditions were made possible by the work done by community health workers who operated under the auspices of South African Christian Leadership Assembly, or SACLA in short. This is a good basis for developing services rendered to persons with disability, and it would further ensure the integration of persons with disabilities and the development of persons with disabilities within and beyond the boundaries of their communities. As a result of decreased funding, community rehabilitation workers were retrenched at the end of 2002. The current service provision to persons with disabilities in our community. Since 2002, all the services mentioned above are not happening, although we still need it very much. It's one of the ladies who is a wheelchair worker, wheelchair user. Although community rehab workers are still around, they are more involved with home-based care and chronic diseases of lifestyle, another said. These programs are currently funded by the Department of Health and Western Cape, which means that the organization is limited to providing home-based care services and doesn't go beyond to actually look after the needs of persons with chronic disabilities. However, services provided are partial, and although they might sometimes provide services, at other times it would exclude persons with disabilities altogether. The challenges persons with disability face. Transport is number one. There's a need for emergency transport in our community, since guided ride bookings have to be made a week before the time. If emergencies arrive for persons with amputees and wheelchairs, they have to hire private cars to transfer them to and from local clinics. Such trips are charged at a minimum rate of 100 rand for a return trip, and those who cannot afford to pay often forego much needed medical treatment at a clinic or to their hospital. The second challenge is waiting times at the clinic. If you want to go to the clinic for an appointment, we need to get up early and make sure that we are there at 4 a.m. to ensure that we are first in the queue. Being this early does not mean that you won't spend the whole day waiting to receive the needed medical attention. And if we think of persons with disabilities, the secondary medical condition, this might be a problem. I'm thinking of practical things such as meals that have to be taken at certain times of the day that need to be accompanied by the patient. And if they don't have that at hand, it might just exacerbate the condition. The third problem is unemployment. Being disabled makes it very difficult to find employment. With a lack of comprehensive health care, as well as opportunities to generate income, the chances of finding and keeping employment remain small. The fourth problem is poor living conditions. Living conditions exacerbate already vulnerable health conditions. Wheelchair users find it difficult and often impossible to maneuver their wheelchairs in the uneven terrain in some parts of our community. The next section will present the suggestions from people with disabilities on the Convention on the Rights of Working with Disabilities. We would like the government to support existing non-profit organizations to be able to employ community rehab workers so that they can provide us with needed and relevant health care, rehabilitation care, and other support services. We are appealing to the government to support non-profit organizations in rendering services that would once again enhance disability awareness in schools and in the community at large. Disability forums need to be established so that income generation projects and other support services can help to integrate persons with disability into society. Persons with disability can contribute to the development of the community and the South African society if the preconditions for equal participation are met and if the barriers in the 1,000 areas for equal participation as outlined in the challenges mentioned above are addressed and removed. Finally, when we look at the proposed Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, the following articles are of importance. Article 5, Equal and Non-Discrimination, Equality and Non-Discrimination. Article 6, which speaks to the women with disabilities, as well as Article 7, 8, and 9. Article 11 speaks of situations at risk and humanitarian emergencies. Article 19, 20, 21, 24, and 25, as well as 26, applies to the, applies to the scenario outlined by the women as we have these discussions. What is very prominent is that physical disabilities still get a lot of attention because it's visible. What is sad is that the women along the West Coast Winelands, with whom research was done, were mothers who abused alcohol while they were pregnant and obviously resulted in fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And to our previous speaker asking why mothers and children were put together, I don't think it's to reduce it, but some of these issues are so closely aligned that the health of the mother often impacts on the health of the development of a child, as we could see with the research done with mothers who drank while they were pregnant.
Government, civil society, and other policy implementing agencies
must guarantee access to all services by instituting structural and operational modifications to their facilities and systems which guarantee access to all facilities and services within each facility. It is therefore the responsibility of these organs of governance to closely monitor the delivery of these services in order to frequently measure their impact on the intended beneficiaries. And changes must be made where service delivery mechanisms are found to be wanting. All organs of society must put into place strategies that enable people living with disabilities to maintain their dignity and live independent lives within their community. These strategies must include providing personal assistance services, assistive devices, and specialized equipment when necessary. We have looked at some of the areas, the department, in terms of where we could have improvements on services of government. One of which is, first and foremost, as a society, our intent is that we need to prevent people from joining the ranks of the disabled. And amongst these, we need to have comprehensive communication strategies. And our government and government departments need to use structures that we have at hand, such as the SABC, to educate the public on issues that create situations where they can find themselves in a situation where they are disabled, amongst which are malnutrition, environmental pollution, poor hygiene, inadequate prenatal and postnatal care, HIV/AIDS. Lately, we have seen tuberculosis as one of the critical issues that contribute to disability. Diseases such as polio, tetanus, whooping cough, and diphtheria. Accidents of varying types, especially industrial and in areas where people are working. We also have people who were injured during our struggles for democracy. And those who continue to be struggling, who are continuing to be injured in situations where we have civil unrest. Now, those strategies need to be, we need to address these using the SABC so that people are able to find ways to mitigate and not find themselves falling victim to situations where they can lead them to become disabled. The Department of Education, the broadcast media must be interactive, providing the public with a platform to air their views and an opportunity to provide feedback on existing government programs as well as suggest new and innovative ways of providing services to those living with disabilities. Local government structures are required to host disability desks in the offices of the mayor, which must establish disability forums and disability centers to deliver messages and services at grassroots level. The personnel operating at these structures are not exposed to all the information that is housed at national and sometimes provincial level. Therefore, they operate in ignorance of policies and instruments of government that should inform their day-to-day activities. Knowledge of these tools would make them effective advocates for the rights of disabled persons, as well as effective agents of change in their community. The Department of Communication is a structure that is responsible for creating a gap in knowledge and practices. As development takes place, old habits are reduced and new ones arise. The consequences of disability add to the obstacles of development. More recently, changing circumstances in the needs of civil society require constant shifts in strategy. Therefore, no policy or law should be deemed to be carved in stone and thus cannot be changed or amended to meet the interests of disability. Focus must always be given to areas of excellence in the services provided by government departments. in the area of education, Article 4 of the South African Human Rights Charter states that disabled people shall have the right to mainstream education with personal assistance such as appropriate assistive technology and specialized teaching modalities. And parents of disabled children must have the right to participate in the planning and provision of their children's education. Disabled youth must be provided with vocational and career opportunities, not early retirement duties or social jobs. The education system should focus on developing the ability of the disabled person. Too often, when a disabled person comes into the midst of able-bodied people in white canes, crutches, or a wheelchair, and lose sight of the capabilities of the disabled. As a vehicle of development, education must provide skills training in areas such as negotiation processes, organizational abilities, mutual support, and interpersonal relationship skills, as well as information skills and sharing. Persons with limited communication skills, such as the mentally handicapped, have shown themselves to be able to express their point of view. They are capable of learning self-advocacy skills, and this development must be encouraged. Where schools targeting disabled children have been set up, they are often poorly resourced as they take on a quasi-governmental program, which keeps them away from full access to all available government resources. The concept of adaptive education that is recommended by the expert group of the United Nations UNESCO on the education of the disabled person is reinforced by two guiding principles of the Hilderberg Declaration. The first one is, disabled persons must receive from their community services adapted to their specific personal needs. Through decentralization and centralization of services, the needs of the disabled must be taken into account and satisfied within the framework of the community to which they belong. This is a challenge when you live in rural areas. For many children, impairment leads to rejection or isolation from experiences that are part of the normal development. This situation may be increased by false family and community attitudes and behavior during the critical years when children's personalities and self-images are developing. Stigmatization. This is a large problem that we face. The education system must take the lead in the re-education of society by providing proper lessons on disability issues in schools. Life skill subjects are an appropriate platform to deliver this educational message and to provide lessons on anti-stigmatization. The Department of Education must, however, be commended for co-sponsoring children's television programs which provide education on the safety of public buildings. It emphasizes the importance of using seatbelts in private parks as well as public parks. It also teaches children that basic
tendencies, so let's ask you all 10 minutes to come
Local health care services. Local services, our local clinics, we ask that they be made more accessible for wheelchair and people who are using assistive technology. They are very difficult to use. SASA and other processes, they usually take a long time and require that people who have to use their services have to go in on many occasions instead of using public transport, which is very expensive.
Thank you very much. I hope we also get your copy for the presentation. And our next presenter will be Ms. Antoni Maria Polo.
She is a participant in the
presentation. Then we have dementia.
2005, cabinet approved the definition of disability. That's the exact definition that's in the UN Convention. We then moved on further and we looked at Article 6 and 7, which was talking about children in agreement, and lots of other countries have self-agreement, so we then brought that in. But Article 9, which is accessibility, is the article of the Convention. It's the heartbeat. It's accessibility. We talk of accessibility, you talk of everything. So that was the heartbeat which we fought for. Further on, we moved on to Articles 10, 12, and 13, which we looked at law. Right of life, right to human dignity, right to justice. And South Africa then moved on to those articles, and we pushed very hard, especially in Article 13, access to justice. Article 23, respect for home and family. 24, education. 25, health, and I'm happy to see the DG here. We had a colleague from health, and we went back and front fighting with him to say rehabilitation, rehabilitation needs to be put in, and yes, we got it. So it was well. It was taken. Article 27, employment. Within the INDS and various other things, we fought that very hard. We said that 2% needs to be enforced. And yes, we got it right. Article 29, and this we looked at all political parties, and I'm so happy to see most of the political parties here, is that the right to political life, a right to represent yourself as a disabled person within politics, a right to be in political arena. And we need to then encourage our disabled people to take up positions in political parties. We'd like to see more members in the DA party that are disabled as well, and various other parties. I'm not knocking any party here. But then also, you know, driving the force forward. And when we signed and ratified this convention, I can remember in 2007, coming to do a presentation in the same house, in the same place here, and we rallied behind lots of the ANC members of parliament that were disabled, and then Henrietta Mokopane was still a member of this house and not the deputy minister. And she then got her colleagues, as well as from the other parties. And we this thing went through the NCOP and the National Assembly, working for 2 or 3 days. And we were cheered, we were happy, we celebrated in Cape Town International Day for Disabled Persons. Then Premier Helen Zille was the mayor. And she came up and she said, I'm happy to have them in Cape Town. So we had a big celebration at the Newland Stadium, and it was great, it took off. But South Africa signed the optional protocol, and this is where we need to drive. The optional protocol holds people accountable, holds government accountable, and we must make use of that. And that's what we would like Parliament to see, enforcing the optional protocol. Furthermore, as Gauteng, we then engaged with the public protector, and we said, better public protector, you here. You're fighting for houses, you're fighting for toilets, you're fighting for various other things. You're not fighting for the rights of disabled people. And what I'm saying is, right is real. And it's our right to have the real things in life. So give us that opportunity so that we can have right is real, and not just be coming here and addressing our sad problems and sad stories. But the sad problems and sad stories, and I'm going to bond behind over time, is that that is right is real. We need to come there. I just went to a UN thing on the Millennium Development Goals in Bangkok, and listening to the Asian countries and what they need to achieve and what South Africa has achieved, it's a great milestone. We need to pat ourselves on our back. Every disabled person, every parliamentarian, everyone in South Africa, yes, we are moving forward. But we haven't looked at the Millennium Development Goals within the UN Convention. It's something which is lost. As disabled people, the Millennium Development Goals got 2 years left. We need to see how we can sustain the Millennium Development Goals within disability. And that's what we need to look at. Coupled to the UNCRPD, how do we sustain the Millennium Development Goals going forward? And in terms of recommendations, I'm just going to hand over to Dominique, and we just need 2 minutes for that.
Madam Chair, we are going a bit overboard, but it's at our heart, so we're talking about these things.
Madam Chair, I'm going to be very brief, and to address the question, to the powers that you have to hold DGs like the prison DG, and and every other DG of every department. The issue is called reasonable accommodation. It's often misunderstood. People think that reasonable is what you think or what somebody else thinks. Fact is that that is a single concept with two words that are defined in the Promotional Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. Right now, the entire government is every single department, DG and minister, could be taken to court because there is not a systematic budget allocation to mainstream the delivery of core services, what the department does and is supposed to do, to give access to people with disabilities. And if I may, a semi-dialogue with the DG of Health. If you are a deaf person, you cannot communicate with your doctor because the state does not provide interpreter services. And the sad story once of gestures happening between a deaf person who was given the HIV results and the doctor said, you are positive. And the deaf person said, positive, that's great, positive is good. That is the degree of the problem. Reasonable accommodation, at least starting, has started, but for years and years, the 1996 Schools Act was not applied for deaf children. Deaf children sit in a class with a hearing teacher speaking about mathematics, and etc., etc. They're watching a silent movie. That is the extent of their education. It's outrageous. So, Madam Chair, in wrapping up, what this committee can really do for people with disabilities and, as a result, get our reports on the UN Convention and use that tool is to say to every department right after this meeting, as soon as your admin can work out, on your core services you will list for us everything for every type of disability. How are you giving for that type of disability access to your services? And I think it will cover a great many things. And to my home comrade from the Eastern Cape, it must be systematic. It will not be a handout like from the previous government, but part of your right to dignity and life. And as the original preamble of the convention, which states that human rights are universal, indivisible, interdependent, and interrelated. If we are not all free, none of us are free. Thank you.
I'm Karen Barakovitz from an organization, Dementia SA, and I'm sure people are very much aware of the contents of the UN Convention, and I'm not going to elaborate in it in any kind of point form. However, I do just want to allude to the inclusion of two enormously vulnerable groups. So we know that internationally, the rights of persons with disability are inalienable, interdependent, and indivisible, and this is reflected in the Convention. It can be argued that older persons, like persons with disabilities, are such a vulnerable group who, as a result of historical and systemic disadvantage as a group, are not in a position to equally realise and enjoy their human rights. So too, then, are those who are less vulnerable as a result of a diagnosis of dementia, which includes Alzheimer's disease. A UN convention will lay foundation for enhancing the rights of older persons and create a blueprint for potential legislation, policies, practices to member states and to regional bodies. Older persons can be considered a vulnerable group, and we need to recognise that many vulnerable groups may and often do overlap. Some older persons may belong to the group of persons with disabilities. Some may belong to Indigenous peoples, while a substantial amount of older persons are women. Most importantly, it needs to be recognised that persons with disabilities will ultimately join older person sector, and thus the struggle to promote the rights of the sector will ultimately benefit all. Another compelling consideration for strong legal protection of both sectors is the issue of participation and inclusion, the issue of having a voice. Like persons with dementia, older persons often do not have a public space to articulate their concerns or claims or their rights. I allude to this particularly as we have a department on women, youth, children and people with disabilities, but there's not one department within our government that deals specifically with the rights and the needs and the concerns of older persons. It's lumped together in one particular department, as in women, youth, children, and people with disabilities. We don't have a social conscience about older persons in our country, and this is a crying shame. These rights therefore need to be formally recognised. Without clear legal norms, older persons may have difficulties in challenging the stereotypes of them being a burden on society, or as being weak and passive individuals. The existence of international and regionally legal binding instruments, such as the Protocol or the Convention, can facilitate the realisation of their rights in practice, making it a society for all ages and not just an aspiration. So what is dementia, and why could it be considered a disability? The term dementia is the umbrella term given to degenerative brain syndrome, which involves the gradual deterioration in multiple areas of a person's brain, giving rise to a progressive loss of cognitive functioning. Progressive meaning that it gets worse over time. Cognition is the mental process of knowing, including awareness, perception, reasoning, insight, understanding, and judgment. Cognitive functioning is a conscious intellectual activity and controls memory, emotion, behavior, and the ability to make decisions. Dementia changes brain cells, or the connections between brain cells, and impairs an individual's ability to communicate, behave, and make decisions, thus rendering them disabled. Dementia is chronic, progressive, and terminal. It includes a number of conditions, such as Alzheimer's disease, vascular conditions, dementia with Lewy bodies, frontotemporal lobe dementia, Korsakoff syndrome, which is alcohol-related dementia, and over 100 different types of other dementias. It may also be associated with HIV and AIDS. A study done at the University of Cape Town indicates that 1 in 3 people with HIV/AIDS will develop HIV/AIDS dementia complex. A very scary statistic, and one which needs to be taken very seriously, especially with a high incidence of HIV/AIDS in South Africa. Dementia is an epidemic sweeping the entire world. In 2010, an estimated 35.6 million people worldwide were living with dementia. The figure is projected to increase to 116.4 million by the year 2050, and 71% of those with dementia will live in low and middle income countries. It knows no social, economic, ethnic, or geographical boundaries and affects people throughout the world. Every 7 seconds in the developed world, somebody will be diagnosed with a dementia. Every 7 seconds. The number of dementia cases in South Africa is unknown due to our lack of research, our inadequate diagnosis, the lack of training, and no public awareness and education. We have 8 trained and qualified geriatricians in South Africa. 8. We have a number of pediatricians. We have a number of heart specialists. A number of other medical speciality groups are well catered for and well defined. But to care for our elderly population, we have 8 geriatricians. Accurate figures for the cost or the burden of dementia in South Africa simply do not exist. Research on virtually every aspect of dementia is lacking in South Africa. Dementia SA is currently engaged in discussions with a team of highly specialized academics, clinical epidemiologists, psychiatrists, neurologists, to partner with us to embark on crucial and much-needed research on dementia and Alzheimer's disease in South Africa. The research will use globally accepted research criteria, protocols, assessment tools, and methods, and will therefore be accepted by the international community. This type of research has never been undertaken in South Africa before. The study is estimated to cost 4.5 million rand, and we need the support of government to assist with this initial study. It will make a huge difference in the way that we understand the silent epidemic, which is dementia. Dementia is not a normal part of aging. However, the primary risk factor for dementia is advancing age. Most cases of dementia occur in persons over the age of 65, but dementia can manifest in younger persons, as we've seen with HIV/AIDS dementia complex. Persons with dementia eventually need supervision and assistance, not only with important financial and legal matters, but also with basic activities of daily self-care, such as eating, toileting, hygiene, dressing, medications, and mobility. There's no reason to believe that South Africa will fare differently than any other country regarding the projected sharp rise in dementia incidence by 2050. And while the HIV/AIDS epidemic is slowly growing in both life expectancy and growth, population growth, South Africa is nevertheless expected to experience a 52% increase in the number of persons aged 60 and older by the year 2050. A larger population of older persons in South Africa brings an increased incidence of age-related diseases such as dementia. Older persons with physical and or mental issues who become dependent on others are particularly vulnerable to abuse, especially persons with impaired cognitive abilities due to dementia. Some communities or cultures in South Africa, dementia symptoms may be linked with witchcraft, and as a result, violence against sufferers. They may be regarded as mtigati or witches and are vulnerable to that kind of abuse. Early detection and diagnosis of dementia is important for many reasons, one being the ability of persons with dementia and their families to plan and put steps in place to help avoid abuse. These steps include arrangements for care, advanced health care directives, estate planning, and the durable financial powers of attorney. Unfortunately, in South Africa, we do not allow financial powers of attorney to be durable, and this forces families to be subjected to the cost of the court-administered curatorship. Dementia SA supports the valuable work of the South African Law Reform Commission, Project 122, on assisted decision-making. It's been realigned to integrate and to include the UNCRPD, and this law reform is crucial for the protection of people who require assisted decision-making. And we look forward to the support of Parliament to accept the suggestions of the South African Law Reform Commission. The abuse of older persons, and especially those with dementia and cognitive decline, is perpetrated by family caregivers who may be suffering isolation, burnout, lack of support, respite care, and knowledge about this disease. Furthermore, a caregiver of a person with dementia can become the victim of verbal and physical abuse in those cases where dementia may cause personality and behavioral changes in a sufferer. The rights and the protection of older persons with impaired capacity and of elder abuse are inadequately covered in existing human rights mechanisms, and Dementia SA would support a human rights treaty that specifically addresses the situation of older persons with dementia in South Africa. Older persons are a vulnerable population group in South Africa. Those with dementia of any age, and with dementia for that matter, are amongst the most vulnerable, subjected to financial exploitation, abuse and neglect by family members and caregivers. South Africa's transforming health and social care system has no chance of attaining the equality it aspires to if persons with dementia and older persons are not specifically included. We need to promote a social conscience around aging in South Africa so that we can debunk the myth that older persons are a burden to our society, but also acknowledge the vulnerabilities of aging with disease, especially dementia, which robs them of their former selves. In conclusion, the human race is biologically wired to care for helpless babies and ensure their survival. The human race lacks the same genetic and societal motivation to care for helpless adults. It is often said that the true measure of any society is how it treats its most vulnerable members, and this includes older persons and those with life-altering diseases. As our previous speaker so eloquently said, the right is real, and so it is real for those whose reality has been distorted and changed through this cruel disease. Persons with dementia cannot advocate for themselves. We need to be their advocates. We would like to thank the Portfolio Committee and the House for this valuable opportunity to address you and to give a voice to those who have lost theirs through the progression of a cruel and insidious disease, Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karen. We'll now open for questions and comments. Before we do that, I just want to make an observation that out of 9 provinces, Western Cape, I think we never had anyone from Western Cape. Free State the same. Northwest, I think we had one. No, not you. Gauteng, at least we're fortunate enough to have the number. Western Cape, one. Northern Cape, oh, two. Northern Cape? No, I'm talking about Northern Cape. Limpopo, none. Mpumalanga, none. KZN, I think two. And we have advertised on two national newspapers, which is the City Press and the Report. We've also advertised on local newspapers, the Daily Sun, Lintri, which covers people in Setswana, Isolezwe, Zulu. In the first page, we've advertised on the Sun, and then the Sun in the first page for the book of speaking people. And I've mentioned Daily Sun and the Kosa newspaper, I don't know which English people. And out of hello. Am I talking nothing? Yes, I've acknowledged it. And out of 46 government departments, only 2 director generals took travel to come and listen to issues of disability. So we are really challenged. And the Department of Health and the Department of Women and Children with Disability. It's a great disappointment. We are not happy about that. But for those of you, thank you very much. Need to be in line with what the government wants to achieve, and thank you very much for taking issues of disability quite very seriously. I do not want to single out departments that we have hoped that they will be here, because we want all of them to be here, you know, from justice to labor. We all wanted them to be here. But nonetheless, let's continue, members. Time now for comments, observations. and questions. So I will start with from my immediate left, any member who would like to speak until you, Honorable.
Thanks, chairpersons, girl, and thanks to several organizations for their presentations. We know that it's either on behalf of various organizations and or in the individual capacity. Partners that we know is women, children, persons with disabilities, or some might say women, youth, children, persons with disabilities. With regard to disabilities, we, it's supposed to be a help desk. More often than not, in the provinces, it's situated within the premier's department. I would like to know how effective that is, whether there is any communication at all, because for argument's sake, we have this gentleman here from the Eastern Cape, from the official, I take it. And I mean, you know, there they should be able to give assistance immediately on questions of disability or find assistance. I know a lot of isn't like putting it down to municipal or the municipalities are struggling to supply their water. But I'd just like to know how functional are the help desks? Do they assist you? Is all the organizations, are they aware of where you need to contact in any particular province? Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I cannot agree more with everyone about this case, and especially the last two gentlemen that have talked on the issue just this morning in the discussion. I think I'm so worried that if people start taking these ideas to talk to them, they will be okay. Because we are very strong. And we will have to put emphasis on rectifying what is wrong. We need to ensure, I know, that accountability of our line departments comes to the fore. And that it is thoroughly monitored, because alone this committee can't do it. We are interfaced with line departments, and we need to know what line departments does so that justice can occur for persons with disabilities. And it is by time now that this department. We have so many pieces of policies and legislation, but it is never implemented, never monitored, and never really taken to heart. And I think we must be very honest about it. We cannot let this happen year after year after. I sincerely agree that the rights of persons with disabilities need to be highlighted. And I would suggest that at GCIS they have wonderful booklets on Know Your Rights. And I think Home Affairs came up with it, and see the success that happened in Home Affairs department, turning the target around with Know Your Rights, what you can do, what you cannot do. Yesterday there was an excellent book on a very short version on frequently asked questions on the Children's Act that is going to be a violation, which is an excellent example of what you can do in government to help our people with disabilities, our persons with disabilities. So I suggest that we look at these avenues. And then whatever was said is really so much the truth, and we will have to really see what we can do about it and do something positive. From a speaker or listener, I have a question, and your survey or your research was done in the Western Cape. My question then is, seeing that your research was done in the Western Cape, were any of these challenges brought to the attention of the MCs in the province? And if ever, was there any response? Were there no responses? And I'm asking this for a very specific reason, because I'm also involved in wireless.
Like I like to say in this, because when it comes to repeat something and one day somebody tells you and it happened. So from the case study that we had from Germany, where our people went, one portfolio went, and they said 60% of Germans are doing professional. In other words, the Germans, remember, that's a great nation, Abu Albert Einstein, big Einstein, Martin Luther, Karl Marx, all the big names that changed the revolutions in the world come from Germany. German Jews, so they are a great nation. I'm sure they know what they are doing and they are worth cooking. The food, of course. Now, they say 60% of the total population is and in other words, 60%, the majority of their population are trained how to do things. When you do vocational, it's accident, transmission, techno, and you're doing things that you're not like, you're rising like that, implementing and giving people life. Theorizing is fine, but it looks like tertiary university only 40% go there, but the 60% go vocational. I want to ask our lecturer, because she made quite a very impressive presentation, whether she has an idea as regards disability, whether they are getting absorbed. In Germany, actually, the opportunity companies, they are cooperative, which is also job training, something similar to nursing, where you are trained during the college, not at university, where it is theoretical, but practical, more practical. Where you are trained and you get an allowance and you can buy bread at home at the same time. Now, they say companies do on-the-job training in Germany mainly. Deputy colleges are there, but I know in our system in South Africa it is mainly deputy colleges because companies are not reluctant to send people on the job. I want to know, since this is your field training, whether you have an idea whether we are absorbing or you can advise how we can absorb our disabled people into the system. The second big point, the gentleman from Eastern Cape, we went to Eastern Cape through communication. And there are community radios there, there are community newspapers, and SABC always says it keeps in touch with them. I just want to know when property is taken away, I mean that is the public works is the custodian of government assets. When property is taken, like the question was asked, if you report to GPSA, where the structure of GPSA, I mean structures are supposed to be there where society can be supported where there are problems. Because that could have been stopped, intervention could have been there, nobody should take from the disabled, that will stand and fight for. And I'm surprised that it happened, and it that you didn't say who reported to, who was that for assist you. I'm saying DPSA should have a provincial structure, and the premier has a desk, or the mayor, some mayors do have desks. I know that is rumor. Because finally, you know, Limpopo is also rural and poverty stricken. But very good results were done, especially for mission school, go to the school where a lot of our first graduate comes from that school that he went to Doma, like you were here yesterday, maybe you still here. He comes from that school, which was a Roman Catholic school. And it produced, as early as 1970, there was a graduate coming from that school, taken to university and graduated. When I was there, I was told it did very well. In fact, it surprised a lot of students that he used it because I was seeing a blind man for the first time, getting distinction, teaching them in class. So I'm just saying the issue of rural is a big problem, but if things are done, the rural areas have come outshined in the urban area. The last point, Chair, I would like to see with communication, especially the SABC, extended arrangement, because when we speak to the CEO of SABC, they are willing to talk to about disability things. I think DPSA must go talk to them if they give children contact us. Yes, in Parliament in communication, because they promise they can give DP, they can give disability a slot every day or every weekend to talk about issues of, because the big burden is out there in the society, that has a stigma, attitude. If he is disabled, they think, hey, this guy must have angered God so much, why? So, I mean, these things happen, so we need to educate our society that it can happen to anybody, anytime, anyhow. And they see this, and we're not using it. So, I'm guessing that exposure is very important, and facilities are there. It's just us who are not using them to the fullest.
Thank you very much. I will then invite members of the public, if they do have any questions or comments, that I would like to say.
Thank you.
Okay. Not from department, no? Public. Civil society, NGO. You are free to express yourself in any language that you feel comfortable with. Okay. Man. Oh, okay.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. My name is Wanda Mbegi. I'm coming from Eastern Cape. I'm going with Mr. Nwendo. We are really facing a lot of problems from the city. We went to various kinds of people or organizations. DSA, we know the Premier Desk, we know the local government, we know we went to all of them. But up to now, there is nothing that we get as a support from them. So that is why we have a reason to come here, so that we may get any kind of a help that we can get from this place. I'm a teacher of a profession. I'm also studying to the University of Pretoria. I'm facing a lot of problems at work. As you know, that there is an issue of early deployment. I'm also still struggling with that issue, so that I can not work out of getting a lot of overloading work. I'm going to the organization so that they may assist me. We are living in that kind of situation whereby we cannot get any kind of a support or any kind of assistance. So that is why we are here. So I'm trying to answer the question that was asked by the guy before me, that who did you report this issue to? We went to all of the places where we can get help, but up to now, there is nothing. That is almost one of the reasons why we are coming here, so that we can get help. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. You are in trouble, I can see Member Ketan is just smiling. You don't address members as guys and... Okay, but that is fine. Is there any other person from the public who wants to make a comment or ask a question? All right. If that's the case, then there's no one. Is there anyone? Not presenters. Presenters will give you just a minute each of you to respond to any issue that might have been or that might have been posed to you. Okay, then I'll then allow members to respond. Presenters to respond. No. No, she's a presenter. Okay, ma'am. No, can we then allow presenters to respond to questions that were directly posed to you? 1 minute.
On the question...
Before that, if you do have answers, ma'am, you can respond because of the... Yeah, if you do have answers, you can respond. If you don't respond.
I'd like to respond to that. On the question of whether it was taken up or whether it was referred to an NHC, this was a research project that involved mothers and obviously a vulnerable group of people. What I would like like to say about that, there was a feedback meeting held with the health personnel who was involved for part of the research, as well as feedback was also given to the local councillor. The unfortunate thing about this is that a lot of capacity building needs to be done, and women are fearful for the delivery of services. And from the 14 women who were involved in the qualitative research process, only 3 of them arrived on the day on which the feedback was given. So I think in terms of capacity building for them to be able to voice what their concerns are, as well as knowledge translation processes, to explain the processes and explain their rights, a lot needs to be done about that. So having said that, I am working on guidelines and I'm taking this further in developing guidelines on how to interact with vulnerable populations in the health department, in health services that are being provided. There was another question from the honourable member Kekane in terms of what possibilities are there for the absorption of persons with disabilities. At the University of Cape Town, we are offering a disability studies program where we are absorbing persons with disabilities into tertiary programs, and these people can come and do an honours, even a master's, or even a PhD in disability studies. But any other field really is open. We just found that persons with disabilities are quite interested in doing these courses. So that's on the tertiary front. With regards to vocational training programs, a lot needs to be done with that, because from personal experience, and that students are placed in special schools and vocational programs, and what we find is that the curriculum doesn't lend itself to providing these people with the skills that will enable them to have viable economic careers or opportunities.
But no other province has taken on the delegations of power
within the Department of Social Development for the Occupation Act. So, in fact, in those provinces, then it's not a fully enacted legislation. We spoke to the Human Rights Commission, and that is what that's the answer that we got. The second thing is that not all departments of social development have proper programs that are for older persons, and we encourage more of them to advertise those kinds of services. But when we talk about something like a disease, it's not only the responsibility of the Department of Social Development, it's the Department of Health. And in many other provinces, particularly in the Western Cape too, you know, the training of psychiatrists, the training of district nurses, the training of carers doesn't meet, or the hospital staff who deal with people with dementia doesn't necessarily always happen. And we found that there has been a reluctance on the part of Department of Health to take up the responsibility of dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
Thank you very much. There's a gentleman behind the veil. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. He's wearing a color blue shirt. Are you from the department?
No.
Oh, no. Okay, you won't speak. Okay, then can we then break for tea? Before we break for tea, Dominic will respond to your question as to when we do the sum up and the closing remarks next. What is it that we, what happens, so what do we do from here? What is the way forward in terms of the two committees?
Thank
can
you
we
very
then,
much.
Then break for tea. Thank you very much for